Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is May 3rd, 2017. The markets were pretty flat today. The Dow closing at 20,957, the NASDAQ at 6,072, and the S&P at 2,388. Our topic tonight, estate planning and maybe throwing in some healthcare decisions. We'll talk about what you can do with that. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. We are lucky this evening to have a guest with us to help us talk about estate planning and healthcare decisions. And we have with us attorney James Ruggiero. Since 1990, Mr. Ruggiero has been helping families and business owners create estate plans aimed at transferring their legacy successfully to the next generation. He's owner of Ruggiero Law Offices, LLC, with offices in Paoli and Center Valley, where he practices in the area of estate planning, estate administration, elder law, business law, and real estate. Jim's developed a niche in dealing with closely held small business owners and advising on formation, growth, and succession of the business. He's advised clients on contract negotiations, employee contracts and disputes, patents, copyright, real estate lease, and purchase. He serves as a board member of the Estate Planning Council of Lehigh Valley and is an accredited estate planner. Jim, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Lori. Something we both have in common, AEP.
That's right, AEP and Estate Planning Council.
Absolutely.
I met Jim, was it through the Estate Planning Council? I'm trying to think. We've met,
I think, prior to that, and then I was asked to join the Estate Planning Council. We got to know each other better.
Okay, well, Jim's been a great guest on the show. Any listeners who listen often enough know that when I find a favorite guest, I continue to ask them back. And Jim had been here on January 25th. And the reason I note that is that you can listen to podcasts that we've done of prior shows through WDIY.org or through yourfinancialchoices.com. So on January 25th, we had a whole show on powers of attorney. Probably one of the most important documents you can have. And Act 95, was it, Jim?
And Act 95 and the subsequent recent new acts that have corrected some of the deficiencies in Act 95. But that was the big change in Pennsylvania powers of attorney in 2015. Yes.
Okay, so on January 25th, we talked a lot about that topic. And we actually didn't even finish talking about everything that we wanted to. So I've brought him back so we can talk about more topics. But our favorite thing to do is answer questions. And I know it's a beautiful, lovely evening. But if you do have them, you can call us right away, 610-758-8810. You could talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. So, Jim, I was thinking tonight if we started with an overview of the documents that people should have, we want to get that information to people right away because half the population does not have estate planning documents. So would you mind kind of going over that, kind of giving a little overview of those estate planning documents, and then as we have time, we'll talk a little bit about healthcare directives and healthcare decisions. So basic documents.
Or basic documents. I call them fundamental documents because everyone wants a simple will. Simple wills aren't so simple. Families aren't so simple. So I call them fundamental documents that every Pennsylvania resident should have. Whether you're 18 or 108, everyone tells me they don't have an estate. Whether you've got $10,000 or $10 million, you have an estate. Even if you have debt, that's still an estate. So start out with everyone should have a will or a will type instrument such as a revocable living trust. But fundamentally, those two documents, a will and a revocable living trust, they're your written set of instructions. What happens to my property when I die? And if you don't have a plan, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has a plan for you and your family. And you might not like that outcome. So when you die without a will, that's called intestate. It means you don't have a will. And everyone makes assumptions. And if we learned anything as I was a kid, you know, it was a sneak. My dad would let me watch Benny Hill. I never forget when he put up on the chalkboard, never assume. Yeah. And I'll let you guys see Benny Hill to find out why you never assume. But you don't want to make those mistakes to think that it's automatically going to go to my spouse.
Which they, so many people still think.
Because it doesn't. Because if you don't have a will, your probate property will, if you have a wife and children, will pass half to your spouse and half to your children. So that's important to understand. If you have minor children, all of a sudden half of your assets that your wife might need to take care of her kids is going to be held in trust till those kids are 18. So by the way, all of a sudden at 18, they get to write the check because you didn't do any planning. So that life insurance that is there, those assets, those are important things to understand. Also, we have assets that don't pass under your will. Those are called non-probate assets. And you have to think about them in your planning, too. But fundamentally, you've got to have five basic documents. Your last will and testament is the most important if you have a family and you love them. The rest of them are important if you love yourself. Why do I say that? Because there are documents that we call advanced directives, such as a general durable power of attorney, which we spent a lot of time talking about in January. So I'm just going to say everybody should have a good general durable power of attorney in place with an agent. That's a person you trust to make decisions on your behalf if you become unable to take care of yourself. So, you know, I've learned how to, you know, love myself, as they tell me. So I've got my wife to be my agent under my power of attorney. But if something happens and I don't have a power of attorney in place, big problem. You're going to need to go to court, get a court order, put a guardianship in place in order to carry out something as simple as selling the house. So other advanced directives that everyone should have. We're going to talk more about those. Last month was National Advanced Healthcare Directive Month, April. So people should have a healthcare power of attorney, which recent changes in Pennsylvania law made all the healthcare powers go over to that specific section. What is a healthcare power of attorney? It's a limited durable power of attorney that springs into effect when you become incapacitated. So as long as you're healthy, you make all of your own healthcare decisions. But if you're unable to make your own healthcare decisions, you designate an agent, a loved one, a friend to make decisions if you can't do it. And so that's a medical decision. Your doctor will say, this patient can't make their own decisions anymore. So if you have an advanced directive, then you've got a list. You've got your primary agent. Then you can have a first and second alternate. Well, why is this important? Well, because Pennsylvania, again, has a law and has a way to deal with these issues if you don't have a healthcare power of attorney in place. And the problem with that is if you're in a second marriage, your spouse isn't the primary decision maker. Your spouse and your children from the first marriage both have a vote. So all of a sudden, you have gridlock. Mm-hmm. You have children from the first marriage that might not like their stepdad very much and are going to go fight over simple healthcare decisions that an intact family would defer to mom or dad. So all of a sudden, we're at war, and there you've got to go get that guardianship. This time the guardianship is to make healthcare decisions. So fundamental planning eliminates a lot of grief later on down the line. And in today's world, we all hear about HIPAA, Health Insurance Privacy and Portability Act and its amendments. If you need to get information about how a loved one's doing, you should have a HIPAA release so that you can call the hospital. You send your child off to college. That child's 18. They're going to Temple. Something happens to them. They're in the hospital. Guess what? You can't get any information about that adult child because they're over 18 because of the HIPAA laws. You don't have a release there that will permit you to find out, doctor, how's my son or daughter doing? You can't talk to the university without your child's power of attorney, general door of attorney. How are my kids' grades? What's going on? What if there's problems? And same thing for your adult parent. You've got a 90-year-old parent who needs assistance. So all of the documents that we're talking about, the fundamentals, first one, last will and testament. Second one, general durable power of attorney. Three and four are healthcare power of attorney and living will. And fifth, the HIPAA release. They're all tools. They're all healthcare is important. My healthcare is important to me. And I want to make sure that people have those directives in case something happens.
Okay. I have a few questions for you when we come back from our break. I was so enthralled with Jim, I missed our break. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have with me in the studio this evening, attorney Jim Ruggiero from Ruggiero Law Offices. And we're talking about estate planning, estate documents, and we're going to hopefully get through some health directions and options for health directions as we go through the show. Jim just laid out what we call, what he calls the fundamental documents. And I think I made a mistake when I said, tell us the basic documents, because obviously there are no basic documents, as we should clarify. They're fundamental documents, which is a great discerning, what do I want to say, moniker or something?
Well,
I like
to say when you're building a house, you start with laying the foundation. So these fundamental documents are the foundation of your plan. There are ways to advance higher up the pyramid, so to speak, but we all need the foundation, the foundational planning.
Yeah, and I think Jim and I would probably agree that there are a number of cases and stories that we could tell where people didn't always lay the foundation the proper way or didn't complete the foundation and get caught in the consequences of that. So one of the what he described as the fundamental documents, the will, advance directives or the durable power of attorney, the healthcare power of attorney and living will, and then a HIPAA release. So I want to talk about that for a minute because I've not heard of that before. First, let me offer the phone number again. If you want to talk live on air with us, ask us questions. We are here and love questions. Phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You could also talk off air if you're not comfortable talking on air. Lori will answer your question or answer your call and write your question down. So, Jim, I've not heard of a HIPAA release form. So is that a legal document? Is that something you've made up? Is it real? Does it work?
It's real. Does it work? As long as you're aggressive in pursuing the use of it. So all of our healthcare powers of attorney have a paragraph in them that have a HIPAA release so that the agent can get information regarding their family member that they're in charge of. But what if you want your siblings to be able to get information and they live out of town? A standalone HIPAA release is a tool that permits your loved ones to get your information from your doctor or your hospital, but it doesn't require you to be incapacitated. It just, you know, says in the event of an emergency, these people may contact you to find out how I'm doing. And we also include our law firm in there because if someone needs to update their estate planning documents, sometimes we have to ask the doctor, doctor, is our client able to change their documents today? And a doctor will say, well, I can't tell you because of the HIPAA privacy rules. And I can say, well, doctor, here I have this HIPAA release signed by my client, it's important for us to get your medical opinion. Are they able to make, you know, the decisions that one needs to make? Do they have the capacity?
That's brilliant, Jim. That's great, because that is something people see.
And greater minds than me thought of it, but I just utilize the technique as part of our planning. So we like it as a standalone document.
Can I just throw in? Because you're bringing this up, and here is the point about planning and laying the foundation, because some people think, oh, I need a will. And they don't think necessarily beyond that. But if they are laying the foundation and having the fundamental documents, it's also not just about printing something off the internet either that says, oh, here's a healthcare directive or a healthcare power of attorney, because there's these little nuances that could be very important.
Well, this station moniker is WDIY. Do it yourself is not how one should take care of their estate planning. You don't get a plumber to do your electrical work, and I don't get a neurosurgeon to do my heart surgery. You really should have an estate planning attorney or elder law specialist do your planning. Through my 27 years, I've become board certified as an estate planning law specialist because nothing is ever as easy as it seems. If the world were so simple, we could print a form off the internet and everything would be signed and be perfect. I have to tell you, I've seen a lot of mistakes that I've had to correct because people have gone and used LegalZoom.com to do their estate planning or set up their businesses. I'm sure you encounter that.
Yeah.
Oh, we use LegalZoom.com for our planning. Oh, well, what about X, Y, and Z?
Right.
Oh, they didn't mention that. Yeah. We just paid this couple $100 and now we have a couple $1,000 worth of mistakes to fix up.
Yeah.
So people overlook the fundamental responsibility that they have to put a good plan in place. People spend more time planning on their annual vacation than they do their estate plan.
Right. You know, we have a recent family situation, and I have to tell you that there are two attorneys involved. My brother-in-law is sick, and he really didn't want to handle some of the medical discussions, I think, with the attorneys, and asked his sister to step in, and they made an assumption that she had some kind of power of attorney. Well, he actually had not had any documents done. And they said, well, you have his power of attorney. And she's like, no, I don't. And all of a sudden, things change a little bit. So,
cobbler's children have no shoes.
Yes, yes, yes. So folks who are listening, this isn't, you know, just the people who think they don't need documents. This is across all professions and all walks of life, people who don't have the proper documents. And it really is important. And I think that part of our job as estate planning council members is also bringing that attention and to the public.
Well, what if you had to change a beneficiary designation on one of your accounts tomorrow because someone died and you're incapacitated?
Right.
If you haven't given anyone the power of attorney, the authority to do that, it can't be done. What if you need to write a check to pay one of mom's bills? You don't have her power of attorney and you're not on the account. You can't do it. And again, we get into the situation. They're in the hospital. You're 3,000 miles away. Well, we don't have anything on file. We can't tell you anything. Yeah. And I always say the hospital is pretty good about telling you what's going on with your loved ones until there's a problem.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, HIPAA come slamming down, and when there's a problem internally, all of a sudden things get real quiet.
Yeah.
So it doesn't happen often, but it can happen.
And for our listening audience, for folks who don't have their documents, it really isn't as hard as it sounds. The attorneys will help walk you through the process. They're very familiar and could probably assess your situation quite quickly. I think so many people are afraid it's going to cost a lot of money. Let me tell you, it could cost you a lot of money and a lot of aggravation, a lot of grief and sorrow if you don't have the documents when you need them. We're ready for our next break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call and talk live with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are discussing estate issues tonight. I have in the studio with me attorney James Ruggiero from Ruggiero Law Offices in Center Valley and Paoli, Pennsylvania. Jim's a frequent guest on the show, and in fact, we had done a show completely dedicated to Act 95, the power of attorney in Pennsylvania, that just went through some changes to try to close some gaps, correct, things that were missed, omissions. So if you're interested in listening to that show, it is available as a podcast on WDIY.org or yourfinancialchoices.com. And that show was January 25th. So tonight we've been talking about some of the fundamental documents. I love knowing about this HIPAA release. That's a great idea. I had been at a conference last week, Jim, in Chicago, and someone had stood up and said, my daughter went to college, she ended up going to the hospital, and I wanted to call and ask questions, and they wouldn't tell me anything because I think the mother had a healthcare power of attorney, but the daughter could still speak.
She was not incapacitated.
She was not incapacitated, so they wouldn't tell her anything.
If she had a HIPAA release, they would have to tell her.
Okay, so that HIPAA release is something I think very interesting, and why it's important to also work with an attorney who's up to date on everything and kind of knows all these little nuances. So, Jim, we've talked about some of the fundamental documents. What do you think is the most important one, if you had to say, or would you not say, because they're fundamental? It's all part of the foundation.
It's all part of the foundation. So if there's four corners in a house, if you miss a corner, then you're out of balance. So again, the will is important for when you're dead, but I don't care what happens when I'm dead. So while it's, you know, I love my family, I want to make sure everything passes in an orderly fashion. I want a healthcare agent to take care of me when I get sick. I want to have someone have my power of attorney to manage our assets and business and take care of things while I'm alive so everything doesn't go south. Because if I get better, I still want to have my stuff.
Right, right.
And I don't want everything to be lost because people didn't step up to the plate. So what's the most important thing with all these documents? What's the most important one? I can't answer that. I can tell you, in my mind, what's the most important thing is the right person to be in those documents on your behalf.
Yeah.
And so let's call it people. People are what is important because inside all of these documents, you're making a choice to name somebody else to take over for you if you're dead or if you're unable to take care of yourself. So when we're dead, we call that person an executor or an executrix. And if we're living, we call that person an agent under either the healthcare power of attorney or general durable power of attorney. So it's about trust. And I always say you must trust the people inside these documents explicitly and implicitly. Everyone says, oh, I trust my child. Well, you've got a bunch of kids. Which one do you trust the most? Which one is the most level-headed? The person who's your agent under general durable power of attorney might not be the person who should be your agent under a healthcare power of attorney. I had a person recently tell me, and if they're listening, I'm not going to say your name, but tell me when they turned a certain age, their children gave that person a tattoo that says over their heart, pull the plug. So maybe that's not the person you want to be your healthcare agent. Maybe you want someone else, or maybe you do. It all depends on how you feel. So if you are widowed and you just have three children, you could get by without a will because then everything would be split between your three children. So if you didn't have a will, that wouldn't be a fatal flaw. But if you're incapacitated and you need to move out of your house and sell your house and you don't have a power of attorney, well, that's worse because then all of a sudden you haven't taken the hour and a half to meet with an attorney and do the planning and come back and go through the process and get the documents done, your children have to go to court and file a guardianship petition, get a doctor to give expert testimony, and then have a judge make a decision over your life and take the ability away from you and your family to make good decisions. Because a guardian has to report to the court and is limited in the planning they can do for their loved ones.
I think it's really important that Jim just mentioned that it doesn't always have to be the same person. And I also find that sometimes I think those decisions that people have to make in order to do their documents is what keeps them from doing their documents sometimes, because they're nervous about how that oldest child might feel if they name the third child or the second child. So these are questions and processes that an attorney can also help you navigate and know what to, how to have those conversations with your children, or if you're picking a sibling or an aunt or uncle or a mother or a father or someone, whoever you're picking as these people, they can be different, but the attorney can also help you have those conversations as well. Jim, we had a call come in from Kate in Bethlehem, and it looks like she had two questions. Thank you, Kate, by the way, for calling in. We appreciate it. She heard that in Pennsylvania, the spouse is the automatic power of attorney. That's one question. And the second question is, are power of attorney documents filed in a publicly retrievable place like the courthouse? She thinks a family member accessed hers.
So, Kate, thank you for two very good questions. The first one, I always leave with a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. There's plenty of information on the internet, but dealing with professionals such as lawyer myself is where you get wisdom from years of practice. So whoever told you that was flat out wrong. Your spouse is not automatically your agent. You don't have a power of attorney naming your spouse. It doesn't exist, period.
You might not like your spouse or want them to make the decisions. They might be a gambler or something.
Right. Nothing is automatic. So that is not automatic. They're not automatically your agent. You would actually have to have a power of attorney. If you don't have a power of attorney, as we discussed, the only way the spouse could get the ability to make decisions on your behalf is through a guardianship proceeding. So again, how much time did you spend planning your last vacation? I bet it's more time you spent thinking about your estate planning. How about you pick the destination for your vacation and then, all right, say I'm going to do my estate planning as well before I go on that trip. So the second question is, are POA documents filed in a public retrievable place? Because you think a family member may have access to yours. Well, healthcare powers of attorney are filed with the doctor and the hospital, but they're not publicly retrievable. And every time you come in, you have to put them back on the file again. They don't keep them on file. There is no state repository for healthcare directives. Some states have them for healthcare directives. We don't have one in Pennsylvania. I don't think it would be a bad system for healthcare decision making, but you can file a general durable power of attorney at the Register of Wills or with the Recorder of Deeds. You would do that in those circumstances where you only have one original. You want it to be of record because you want to change a deed. So you have to file the original with the Recorder of Deeds. It will go on record. If you want to get certified copies, you then get it from the court and send it out to the bank or the brokerage house or something like that. So that would be a public record.
So the only way they would have been able to access that is if they had gone and taken the time to go look it up.
And if it was actually filed. And it's been my experience that you rarely are actually filing powers of attorney at the courthouse.
So, Kate, be careful out there. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what your circumstance was, but be careful out there. Jim, thanks for answering that question. And Kate, Thanks for calling in. Folks, we're coming up at halfway through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. And we will be back after this break.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
our Lehigh Valley weather here on Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert. Currently 64 degrees. We've had a sunny day today. Tonight, a low around 38. Tomorrow, Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 63. Then we're going to start with some rain. Thursday night, an 80% chance, low around 50 degrees. For Friday, a 90% chance of rain, thunderstorms possible, and we could have some heavy rainfall, high of 66 degrees. New rainfall amounts, 1 to 2 inches possible. Friday night, an 80% chance of rain, low around 53. Saturday, a 60% chance of showers with a high near 64. And Saturday night, a 40% chance of showers with a low of 45 degrees. And now it's back to Your Financial Choices with the lady who would never think of spending more time planning her vacation than planning for her estate, Lori Siebert.
Thanks, John. Welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me this evening Attorney Jim Ruggiero from Ruggiero Law Offices, with offices in Center Valley, Pennsylvania, and Paoli as well. And we are taking questions as well. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can call and ask questions live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. And Jim, we had another caller, Karen from Gilbertsburg. Karen, thank you so much for calling in. And the question was, does estate planning change from state to state? Great question, Karen. And she also added, originally she got it done in Michigan. Hey, Karen, I'm from Michigan. I was just there for 2 weeks. Love Michigan. So anyway, I digress. She originally got it done in Michigan. So is it still good in Pennsylvania? That is a great question. So, Jim, do you have some guidance for her?
I do. Well, Karen, you live in Pennsylvania now, so while your Michigan estate planning documents may be valid in Pennsylvania, and by the way, they are valid in all 50 states, the estate planning documents due in one state are valid in another state. The question is, do they work the way you want them to? You've made a move, so that's a life change. Do you need to take a second look at those? So I think it's always good to get a relationship with a good financial planner and a good estate planning attorney when you move to a new state, because Michigan's state laws with regards to inheritances are different than Pennsylvania state laws with regards to inheritances. So you would want to educate yourself about Pennsylvania inheritance tax laws, because we do have an inheritance tax in Pennsylvania, and you would want to know about that. And more importantly, the Pennsylvania powers of attorney have specific formats that are required. So if you're going to be residing in Pennsylvania for a lengthy period of time, I would advise updating your powers of attorney for health care and general durable powers of attorney to conform with Pennsylvania state law, because Pennsylvania banks and hospitals are used to seeing the Pennsylvania forms, and they're better able to clearly understand who your agent is and what your wishes are. So they are good, but I would have them reviewed. Your will is probably fine, or your revocable living trust, but it's those advanced directives that we want to make sure that you get checked out.
Thank you, Karen, for that call. And I will add, too, that especially, again, moving from any state into a state that has an inheritance tax, one of the reasons you want to look at that is because it may change how you might want to pass assets, or who you want to pay that inheritance tax. Is the inheritance tax going to come out of your estate, or is the inheritance tax going to come, you know, out of the assets themselves? So it's really important to kind of go through that and follow the threads. That's one thing I always see in my mind when I'm talking about estate planning, is following the threads, and attorneys can help you do that as well. So thank you for that call, and you've got your Michigan documents. At least you have something, so I'm proud of you for that, but it might be time to have those looked at again. Jim, we have another call from Paul in Easton, and he asked, if you have a deed with your child on it, now we know a lot of parents think they're going to save inheritance tax by adding their children to the deed.
And forget about capital gains taxes, which are more than inheritance taxes.
Right. So if you have a deed with your child on it, and the child, oh, now in this case, it says his child's underage, and you want to sell the property, why do you have to go to court for that? So I'm not sure if he's coming in with some assumptions on this question, and let me hand that to you so you can look at it a little bit. But
well, he's correct in that if you have a deed with a minor child on it in order to sell the property, you will have to go to court to have a judge approve the sale, because minors cannot enter into contracts. And minors who are beneficiaries of inherited property have that property held in trust for them. Under, you know, Pennsylvania law, anyone under 18 cannot inherit anything outright. It has to go into a minor's trust. So it would be curious to me that I would see a deed between a parent and a minor child. I wouldn't think that would be great planning, but that's what happens when people don't spend that time and they're worrying about their vacation. But if that house is owned jointly between parent and minor child and they want to sell it, half of the proceeds would need to go back into that minor's trust and be held there for that minor until age 18. And you would need a court order. The court would have to appoint, if one had not already been appointed, a guardian for that child. And if the amount is in excess of $25,000, they're not likely to appoint mom or dad to be guardian over that child's money.
Oh, and the assumption might be that they would be the guardian because they're the parent.
Right. And you are the natural guardian of your children. You are their legal guardian. But the law is different when it comes to property that is gifted or inherited to that minor. Things are handled differently. If it's not into a uniform gift to minor's account and it's a deed to real estate, then the minor can't sell the property because they're under 18. They can't join in the new deed to the new buyer. They can't join in the contract for the agreement. So any title company is going to say, we need a court order so that we can give title insurance to the new buyer on this property.
Wow. That was a great question, Paul. I have never heard that. And so that's all new information for me to hear, too.
It's Jeff. A first for me tonight as well.
Yeah, but you knew the answer. So thank you, Paul, for that question. Folks, if you have questions, since they're coming in faster now, I'd like to give the number again. 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Jim, sometimes people try to avoid probate and lawyers and doing documents because maybe they can't face it or they think they can do it cheaper. We've talked a little bit about that. But there are things people do try to do. They might use beneficiary designations, asset titling, transfer on death, that kind of thing, to do some of their own estate work. Where do you think they might end up getting in trouble?
By not knowing what they need to know. You don't know what you don't know. So what they should know is anytime we're doing planning for a married couple, it is our goal as a firm to avoid probate when the first client dies. So they need to know that a will doesn't cover, as you said, non-probate property. A will doesn't cover their IRA or their 401k or their life insurance policies. And we want to make sure that that will and the rest of the plan syncs up together. So if they have stock in John Hancock because it demutualized and became a stock company in the name of the policyholder, they're going to realize they're going to have to probate in order to sell 100 shares of John Hancock stock. I mean, that's a problem. Oh, I get these dividend checks and I get these statements, but I don't really know what they mean. All of a sudden, there's a problem. We had to probate an estate for a fur coat, a $10,000 fur coat that was left at the dry cleaners. Imagine that, because of how the accounts were set up. So we don't think probate is a dirty word.
Right.
It's just a process. And in Latin, it means to register the will. But we want to avoid probate on behalf of our client families when the first spouse dies. And if their estate is complex, we use a revocable living trust and fund it with their assets so that we avoid probate when the second of them dies. And if we fund a revocable living trust for a client family while they're living, then those assets can be controlled by successor trustees when that client or clients become incapacitated. So you have a mechanism to help prevent elder abuse with a revocable living trust by funding those rev trusts. You can avoid quote-unquote probate, but you're not going to avoid inheritance taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone thinks by avoiding probate, they've, you know, beaten the system. you're still going to have to do a trust administration versus an estate administration, and you're going to have the same tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more work done at the outset by funding a trust while people are living. So sometimes people don't want to expend the money on that more complex plan, and they'll take the more fundamental route and stick with a will. But we can help families avoid probate. We think that's a good goal.
Yeah, and I think, too, sometimes people get confused about why you want to avoid probate. You know, it, as you said, Jim, it's not like a bad word, to, especially to people in Pennsylvania, because it's not a big cost here.
No, it's not. Can we go back to the house, though?
Sure.
Because all the parents want to put the kids on the house to avoid probate, to avoid problems. So they bought that house 30 years ago for $50,000, and today it's worth $350,000. So you got a $300,000 capital gain. So they put the child's name on the house, and then they die. Well, that child isn't going to pay inheritance taxes if it's been, you know, they're going to pay it on half
of it. If it's more than a year.
But more than a year, if they gift it outright and put it all in the child's name.
Okay.
But they're going to pay 23.8% federal capital gains tax because it's in excess of $250,000, plus, you know, 3% for the state. So they're going to pay 30% tax on that $300,000. They're going to lose nearly $100,000 versus 4.5% on a $350,000 house. Would you rather pay $13,500 in tax, or would you rather pay $100,000 in tax?
Yeah.
That's where those no good deed goes unpunished plans come into place. They think they're doing the right thing by deeding the house to their child, and all of a sudden they financially have created an obligation that they didn't have to.
Because they didn't understand the complexity of not just inheritance tax law, but income tax law and all of the issues around that. And ownership, there's so many rules, folks. There are so many different rules, and you have to know which ones apply. You can't make assumptions about them. So lots of great information tonight. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So we've talked about the fundamental documents. We've talked about powers of attorney. We've talked about some of the questions that have come in tonight about deeds and spouses and having estate planning changes from state to state. Can we talk for a minute, Jim, about, because we're going to have our last break in just about 2 minutes, but one thing I recalled from the show you did on January 25th on powers of attorney, if I recall right, we have often thought of a durable power of attorney as a separate document from a healthcare power of attorney. Let's pretend we want... typically, we might want the same agent or different agents. If we want different agents, we probably want different documents. But what if we're going to have the same person be my power of attorney and my healthcare power of attorney? I recall that I thought you said that they can have a healthcare power of attorney clause in a durable power of attorney document. Can you combine them?
Actually, what we discussed was that was one of the changes to the Pennsylvania power of attorney law where they removed the ability to have that inside the general durable power of attorney.
So document. Now they're separate.
They're now separate. They're in a step. The healthcare powers have been moved to a different chapter of the Pennsylvania statute.
And it really makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, it does because a healthcare power of attorney document's 5-6 pages long.
Right.
It's very discreet. Here's my healthcare agent named on page 2. Here's my living will starts on page 3. Here's my witness signatures. And then I've got my general durable power of attorney, which is more comprehensive. Could be 25 pages long. You don't need to be flipping through 25 pages to find the healthcare section to make sure that the powers are there. So it's just simpler. We have Pennsylvania statutory forms for healthcare that make life easier.
So that could be another reason why it might be time to dust off those old documents and look at that again.
Because there are old documents around that just have everything all in one.
Yeah.
And so that's more DIY as well. The all-in-one stadium's gone. We have, you know, multiple, you know, stadiums for football and basketball and, you know, baseball anymore. You don't want to do it all on one roof. You don't want to do it all under one power of attorney.
Okay, so good. I'm glad I recalled some conversation about that. Folks, we're coming up to our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're taking calls live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney James Ruggiero. I call him Jim, from Ruggiero Law Offices in Center Valley, with offices also in Paoli. And he practices in estate planning, estate administration, elder law, and he throws some business law and real estate stuff in there too, which is why he was so quick to be able to answer that question about the minor on the deed. So if you have questions, folks, we still have time. 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Jim, if we could take the last, 13 minutes here to talk a little bit about some health care decisions. I was recently at a conference where a woman was encouraging people to review something called the POLST, which is a physician order for life-sustaining treatment. And what I understood is that there is something... a physician's order is one kind of document to be able to describe maybe your wishes, but the POLST was more for something end of life, you're chronic, you're on your last leg, what kind of wishes you have. That is a physician's order, but we've been talking during the show about the healthcare power of attorney. So would you mind taking a few minutes to kind of talk about when you're doing estate planning, you're probably also talking to your clients about their health care and what's going on. Can you tell me what that framework looks like? And do you ever talk about these POLST documents?
So last month was National Advanced Healthcare Directives Month. Everyone should be aware of their ability to have healthcare directives. So I was able to talk about how we should take charge of our health care with the right legal documents. So when you talk about the POLST, nationally short for Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, here the POLST stands for Pennsylvania Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. Those are out-of-hospital doctor's orders. So we have to talk to our clients about life and death and the dying process. And at the end of your life, the living will and healthcare power of attorney are effective when you're inside the hospital, but they don't work outside of the hospital setting. It's important to understand that. That's why at the end of life, clients are advised to consider putting a POLST in place or an out-of-hospital do not resuscitate order. So there are two sets of doctor's orders that can be put in place, and there's some great information about POLST on our Pennsylvania websites, but it's all about translating your wishes into written instructions. So when I talk about estate planning, I always say our documents are just a written expression of your wishes. And to me, you ask me which one is the most important, and I can't give a great answer, because to me, healthcare matters so much. Do we want to tame the dying process? If I stop breathing and I'm at my home and I'm 90 years old, do I want to have death with dignity, or do I want an EMT to come in and start giving me CPR? Mm-hmm. Submit to you, I personally would want to have death with dignity. So he's not going to be able to come in and look at my healthcare power of attorney and living will and determine if I'm at the end of my life.
Right, because it's a legal document. Not going to be interpreting it.
Right. Okay. So he can't do that. He's not allowed to do that. He must start CPR. And this is important to understand because it applies for folks who are at assisted living facilities and independent living facilities and skilled nursing facilities, that they're not going to look at your living will or your healthcare power of attorney inside the facility you live in. They can't do that. They're not the doctor. They're just people who are providing you with a place to live. Now, they may have skilled staff there, but unless you have written orders, a post is required under Pennsylvania statute to be dark salmon in color and posted above your bed at the facility that you reside in. And there you choose whether or not you want to be resuscitated or not if you stop breathing. And then if you choose to be resuscitated, there are specific choices that can be made with regards to what type of treatment do you want. Do you just want to be kept comfortable and pain-free? Do you want aggressive treatment? Do you want antibiotics? So that's signed by your doctor. So you don't go over the form with your lawyer, okay? We give our clients the forms and say, here's the forms that we have that are Pennsylvania forms for the POST or the out-of-hospital DNR. If you are concerned about how you're going to be treated at the end of your life and you're at that point in time, then you should have a frank discussion about your doctor, about, doctor, what's best for me? Is it a POST? So I want CPR but limited treatment, or do I not want CPR? You know, am I allowed to die naturally? And so if you don't want to be resuscitated, I would submit to you that the POST is not the document for you. You want the out-of-hospital DNR, the do not resuscitate order. But if you do want to be resuscitated but have, you know, be kept comfortable and pain-free, then the POST is for you, or limited interventions, or you want full treatment. You want to make sure that they know how to address you, because getting, you know, CPR is a very invasive process. Mm-hmm. And in my own family, my mother had a heart attack at the hospital when she was 72, and they revived her, and it took them 45 minutes, but she came back and she survived. She had full capacity, but she was beat up pretty badly and she was angry.
Oh,
why did they revive me? And you can't make this stuff up, folks. True story. I said, Mom, you only had a heart attack. You didn't have an incurable and terminal illness. You weren't permanently unconscious. You weren't in a persistent vegetative state, okay? All those things need to be in place for your living will to apply that's going to limit that treatment at the end of your life. I said, you didn't have a do not resuscitate order on your chart. And I said, if you had one of those on your chart, they would not have revived you.
Well, that's a good story, too, because maybe I know you could survive after 45 minutes
of CPR. Well, you can, but,
CPR.
You know, but they got the oxygen. I mean, she was in the hospital. Hey, if you're going to have a heart attack, you want to have it in the hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
But as Paul Harvey says, the rest of the story is the next time she went into the hospital several years later, the first thing she did was have a do not resuscitate order put on her chart. And so when she stopped breathing 2 days later, she died.
Yeah,
from the flu and its complications. And while we were very sad to lose our mother, I will tell you, it was her choice.
Right.
She got to make it. She had death with dignity. And her doctor called me 3 times to discuss the matter. And I said, as her son, I'm heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
And I was. Mm-hmm. But as her lawyer, she was of sound mind.
Yeah.
And you have to honor her instructions.
Right.
My wishes were not her wishes. So my mom was a very strong-willed woman, and her wishes got carried out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what it's all about, making sure that your wishes get carried out. That's why we do planning. If you don't love your brother and his wife, well, you want to make sure that they're not going to get a piece of, you know, your inheritance when you die. If you got one child who has never been a good kid and they're going to pull the plug and you want to live a long life, you don't want that child to come and make those decisions.
Yeah.
If you want to take care of people that have taken care of you in your lifetime, you can honor them in your will, and you can get the people that care about you to be decision makers for you. Agents are advocates. You need to have people in your documents who are going to be your advocates for your wishes, not what they think is great. Mm-hmm. Oh, mom, you meant to give my child, your grandson, you know, a college education, didn't you? So let's write that check.
Right.
Okay. There's where an abuse can happen. So, you know, you have to be careful with who you put in these documents. Trust but verify. Name co-agents. Make sure that the sibling who's your agent has to give reports to your financial advisor, your CPA, or your lawyer, or the other family on a quarterly basis. I mean, you can build protections in. Talk to your family about the end of life. 2015, unfortunately, I had to go to a lot of funerals. Half of them were for people under 50 who didn't think that, you know, life was going to end for them before 50. The other were over 70. They didn't always have their planning in place. They hadn't talked about what happens if. You know, it's one thing to assume, all right, I die, everything's going to go to my spouse, and know that that's wrong. It's another thing to say, it's here, it's now, and I'm diagnosed with this terminal illness. Now these terms inside my living will have meaning. Or I'm 86 years old, I've lived a long, full life, and I've been here at this assisted living facility, which they treat me great, but I've been a widow or widower for 15 years. If I stop breathing, let me go, because I've had a long, full life. We get to tame the process and just say, don't over-treat.
Right.
I always like to call it the electricity rule. If there was no electricity, what would happen? So the machines would stop, wouldn't they?
So if I
would die without electricity and it's my time, let me go.
Yeah.
And that's assuming I'm, you know, my goal is to go to 100. So I don't want it to happen anytime soon. But
you know what I think is really important here, too, though, Jim, and what you've kind of demonstrated just through this, you know, conversation. First of all, it's easier to have these conversations than people realize. You make it comfortable. You make it kind of fun. And it is part of life. So we can have these conversations. But the other part of this that I see unfolding and coming out of it is how much misunderstanding is out there, that you probably have people who think they have a living will and a power of attorney and that's the end all be all, or people have the pulsed and they think that's going to be the answer. And they don't realize that certain documents are going to work when you're in the hospital. Certain documents are going to work when you're not in the hospital, as you said, out of hospital orders. You know, this can be complicated and it's hard to navigate. So it's really comforting to know that there are people out there to help us through it. And it's worth taking that time to do it. And until you're someone who's going through it, you don't realize.
Everybody has a toolbox in their house. What we help these families do is fill up the toolbox for their estate planning and take it home and know how to use it. And there are great planners here in the Valley who can help families get the planning done and put the right tools in place. There are so many different variations of planning that's out there, and everybody is going to get an opinion. You know, talk to a trusted professional such as yourself or myself or other people that you know who have been doing it, and know that the goal is to work together on making sure that we've got you covered. You have homeowners insurance. You have car insurance, you have health insurance. You need insurance that your wishes get carried out when you're ill or at the end of your life. And that's what these documents, these healthcare documents, help do. So, you know, you can cover the bases as long as you know where they are.
And also sometimes new tools do become available. And so you want to pull out that toolbox and check it out once in a while.
Because a pulse is a great tool. An out-of-hospital DNR is a great tool. And, you know, I have to look at it from the perspective of the person who has to go through all of the healthcare interventions that happen throughout a life. You know, at some point you're just saying, I've had a good life and I'm blessed and I don't want any more healthcare interventions. So if I'm in the hospital, here are my instructions. And if I'm out of the hospital, here are my instructions. So it's just a different set of instructions.
Jim, it's been a great show as usual. I love having you here. You're really great. If folks would like to reach you, Jim, do they reach you via telephone or website? How do they reach you?
They can reach me at my Center Valley office by calling 484-224-3487 or on the net at www.ruggiero.com. law, one word, .net. That's R-U-G-G-I-E-R-O, law. So again, the website is www.ruggierolaw.net. And
the phone number, 484-224-3487.
Yep, we're right around the corner at 3477 Corporate Parkway.
Great. Jim, it's been wonderful having you. Thank you so much. Next week, I'm going to have another attorney, Sarah Andrew of Schaffstall Elder Law, regarding Special Needs Fairness Act and the ABLE Act. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Have a great week. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, John. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Lori, for being here. And thank you, listeners, especially. Have a great night. Bye.
Thanks, Lori.